I am really excited to be here, and this morning I'm going to talk to you a little bit about our school and the partnerships that we have with this church and with the community. And then, because this is all about leadership, I'm going to share with you some of my research from the past 5 years, just a tiny bit of research, because I know we are going to leave at 1 o'clock, so I won't go over. But thank you for having me, and just to tell you a little bit about myself, I grew up in Grant Parish, right across the Rapides line, and actually grew up with Tyler Meeker over there. And when I started teaching, I started in Grant Parish, even though I lived in Rapides, because I married somebody from Alexandria. So I spent most of my time teaching in Grant Parish, and like he said, I was an instructional coach. And then I decided to work at the central office and in Rapides, and that was great, and I liked it, but I missed the kids. I missed feeling like I was making a difference. So when it came time for several principalship positions that came open this time last year, I talked to the superintendent about possibly applying for the job, and I knew there would be several people, and he, you know, kind of questioned me, and I said, I want to do the research. You know, I've researched and read about everything, and I've written about what I've learned, but I'm ready to step into the role and do that. And so this school year, I've had the opportunity to work at a school that is considered a previous turnaround school, which means that our schools, as most of you probably know, are scored by letter grade. And so it was a D school, and now we are a C, which is really exciting. But it's a high poverty school, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in just a moment. So I wanted to start by showing you some pictures of our students and telling you a little bit about my year this year. When I was researching and really wanted to take on a principalship, I had no idea that I would be wiping noses and tying shoestrings that are wet because they've been drug in the bathroom. That's very yucky. I didn't realize that I would be having to make really hard decisions for students, and that I would have parents that would come in my office and cry because they didn't know what to do. And I didn't realize that we would have moments of just complete elation and so much joy, and then in the same day, my assistant principal and I would just cry because of the sadness that we've seen in some of the families. It's been a roller coaster year. It's been exciting. It's been very, very challenging. It has been stressful, but it's been so, so worth it. So I wanted to start with this quote. Leadership is communicating people's worth so clearly that they are inspired to see it in themselves. And that's one thing that we try to do with our students. Our school is going to be a Leader in Me school next year, which means we're going to teach our students the 7 habits of highly effective people. And we are also going to begin allowing them to take on leadership roles throughout the school. And we actually got really excited when we started reading the book that kind of introduces the concept. And so in the last semester, we've started providing students opportunities to step out and be leaders. So, for instance, on our leadership council, we have about 25 students, and they all have different roles within the school. Some greet the students at the doors. Some help the special needs students get to their classrooms. Some of them lead the announcements in the morning. And when I say lead the announcements, they even call teachers' classrooms to tell them that they need some students to come up and say the pledge. They work the entire intercom system. They look up the birthdays so that they can announce it. So it's exciting to see our students stepping into those roles. And we want them to realize that it's their job as well to communicate other students' worth, because we all have potential and we all have gifts that we need to share. So just a little bit more about our school. Pineville Elementary has changed over the last decade. Some of you have mentioned that you went to Pineville Elementary, and it's a great place, but it's different than it used to be. We pull from the surrounding area, and if you drive, you know, in the neighborhoods in front and behind the school and down by the Red River, you'll see that it's a high poverty area. So about 95% of our students come from high poverty homes. Most of them are on free lunch. And we are a pre-K to sixth grade school this year. And next year we're going to be fourth through sixth grade, which we're actually very excited about for several reasons. We have about 300 students. We are considered inner city, even though it's a small city. And we have the highest homeless population in Rapides Parish, which is very surprising. You would think it'd be some schools in Alexandria, but it's ours. And we have a very transient population. So because I taught in Grant Parish, you know, it was at a Title I school, so I was familiar with poverty. But honestly, this year has completely opened up my eyes, and it's really changed my world. Because unless you come from poverty and you've lived in it, or you work with people on a daily basis and form relationships with families, you don't really realize the types of struggles that they have. And we have some students, actually a lot of students, who have families that are broken apart and there have been drugs involved. They tend to hop from aunt's house to back to mom, and then sometimes to grandma, depending on who's in jail at the time. And I just didn't realize when I took on the job that most of the kids would have these problems. And it's difficult to tackle, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 kids with those types of issues. But when you have 95% of the students with those problems and that background, it's really difficult. In fact, just this morning, one of our students was acting out, and he started getting really aggressive toward the teacher, and it's a little one. And we realized that his dad was out of jail, and his dad has a history of domestic abuse. So when the student is showing those same aggressive tendencies, that's probably why he's back at home. And we constantly have parents in and out of jail and for different reasons. But all that to say, it has given us such a purpose, and it is a calling. And our students are really thankful for everything that they get. And if you ask, if you have family that's who are teachers, if you ask them about students and the school food, most of the time, they complain about it. But at our school, I have not heard one student complain about the lunches. And for so many of them, that's all they get is breakfast and lunch. We actually feed about 30 families once a month, and we wait till the end of the month when their financial assistance from the government has run out. And sometimes they have hard time budgeting that, and so we give out food once a month to those families. So it's been very eye-opening, and I've been able to see some of the issues that as a community we need to talk about and tackle. And I also realized that a lot of the people who make decisions at the state level, some of them don't realize the types of things that we're facing. Not just in a school, but when you think about it, all of the schools in Louisiana and in our area, and if you think about Pineville, for instance, we hold all of the kids that are the future. And now is the time to put some things in place so that they are not feeding right into the criminal justice system. So there are some things and some ideas that I have, but I'm not going to talk about that today. But maybe some, if you're interested in just brainstorming some more ways that we can partner together to try to prevent our students from falling into those same destructive paths that a lot of their parents have. But I wanted to show you a video, and it's short, but I showed it to the faculty when we came back from Christmas, and it really speaks to why school teachers and administrators and staff members, why we have such an important calling, and it's our job to fill in the gap that is there for so many of our students. So I'm going to see if this will work.
Line up, everybody line up. We're about to race. Everybody line up. Shoulder to shoulder, take off your backpacks. Basketball, line up, we're about to race. Hey, we are racing for a $100 bill. The winner of this race will take this. It's a $100 bill. Before I say go, I'm gonna make a couple statements. If those statements apply to you, I want you to take two steps forward. If those statements don't apply to you, I want you to stay right where you're at. Take two steps forward if both of your parents are still married. Take two steps forward if you grew up with a father figure in the home. Take two steps forward if you had access to a private education. Take two steps forward if you had access to a free tutor growing up. Take two steps forward if you've never had to worry about your cell phone being shut off. Take two steps forward if you never had to help mom or dad with the bills. Take two steps forward if it wasn't because of your athletic ability, you don't have to pay for college. Take two steps forward if you never wondered where your next meal was going to come from. I want you guys up here in the front just to turn around and look. Every statement I've made has nothing to do with anything any of you have done. Has nothing to do with decisions you've made. Everything I've said has nothing to do with what you've done. We all know these people up here have a better opportunity to win this $100. Does that mean these people back here can't race? No. We would be foolish to not realize we've been given more opportunity. We don't want to recognize that we've been given a head start. But the reality is we have. Now, there's no excuse. They still got to run their race. You still got to run your race. But whoever wins this $100, I think it'd be extremely foolish of you not to utilize that and learn more about somebody else's story. Because the reality is, if this was a fair race and everybody was back on that line, I guarantee you some of these black dudes would smoke all of you. And it's only because you have this big of a head start that you're possibly going to win this race called life. That is a picture of life, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing you've done has put you in the lead that you're in right now. When I say go, on your mark, get set, go! If you didn't learn anything from this activity, you're a fool.
It's a sobering video, isn't it? Yeah. And I think about my own children who gets gymnastics lessons and piano lessons, and one of them plays tennis, and, you know, we do homework with them and study with them at night, and their dad packs lunches for them every day. And most of the students at my school, the overwhelming majority, They don't get any of that. And it doesn't mean their parents aren't trying. They just haven't been given that head start. So it's our job as a school to give our students the head start, to try to provide opportunities for them that they wouldn't get elsewhere. So this year, we're going to try to have an archery team and a golf team, and we already have basketball and cheerleading and robotics. And so we're trying to expand the things that we offer our students so that they can have those opportunities. So all that to say, it takes a village to raise a school, and especially a school that has such high need populations. And as you can see, you know, we have students that have to rest during the day. And a lot of our students that have behavior issues, we find out that they don't go to bed until 2 in the morning sometimes. And it's because mom doesn't get off work until, you know, 11 or 12 at night, and then they eat supper at that time. So it's just, it can be overwhelming, but I'm also really hopeful because I can see the difference that we're making. And I wanted to share some things that this church is doing to partner with us. Some of you may not know. And so first, we have birthday parties every month for the students, and that is sponsored by the church here, and Miss Kimberly Aguilar comes over and does that for us. And a lot of our students never would get birthday cake if it weren't for this. And so they are so, so excited, and they'll ask all month long when the birthday party is. We also get donations for clothes, school supplies, and belts, and actually shoes. I forgot that. But I didn't realize how much we needed clothes. I mean, we gave out a pair of clothes this morning. It's a daily thing, and sometimes multiple times a day. Some students just come so extremely dirty, we just changed our clothes. And that happens pretty frequently. And we supply them with belts because that's part of the uniform code. And one thing that is kind of our mantra is, you know, we care for our students and we want to fill in the gap, but our expectations still have to be high. So we're going to meet the dress code and we're going to meet those expectations. And then this year we had a prayer walk throughout the school in August. And I know that this church and the church that I'm a member of, and there are some other churches that do pray for us. And I'm going to stop for a minute and talk spiritual with you guys. We need prayer. Our students, it's like you can tell that they are fighting within. And we need wisdom to know how to help them. So please, you know, when you think about it, pray for our schools and not just ours. We have students facing things at home that we can't help them with, but it's only by God that addictions are going to be broken. So keep us in mind for that. Sorry, I didn't mean to get emotional there. And then for lunch bills, most of our kids are on free lunch, but a lot of people don't know that there is an application that has to be filled out perfectly correctly, or they don't get free lunch. And that bill adds up until that application is turned in correctly. And then it's the parent's responsibility to pay for that bill. And we had about 5 students who we went back and forth with the parents trying to get this application filled out correctly. And you would think, oh, it's not that hard. You just call the parent, they come up and fill it out. But it's finding a working phone number or catching the parent if they happen to come. And then sometimes it's different parents and they put down different information. And anyway, so when these bills start adding up, the church has actually helped us with some of those lunch bills so that the families would not have to pay for that. And we have other partnerships as well. I want to mention the United Way, and they're the ones who are underwriting the Leader in Me program for us. And then A-Safe Storage just came on board as a partner with us, and their goal is to help us start to transform the look of the school. That's part of the Leader in Me program. They want us to start changing the school culture by changing the inside look of the school. And so we're going to have quote leadership quotes around and new visuals and new furniture and things like that. And I know that they're starting with us. It's going to be a long time to, you know, project to build on. So anyway, thank you to our partners, and I want to say thank you to this church for everything that you do to support us. So the second part of my talk today is about leadership. And these are the topics that I researched for my dissertation, but I'm not going to talk about all of those. I wanted to talk about things that may apply to you and the place that you work and serve. And the first thing that I want to say, as you all know, leadership really matters. It can make or break the organization. The leader establishes the culture, which affects how people behave and perform. The leader initiates change, and we could talk about top-down changes and bottom-up changes, but I'm not going to go deep into that for time's sake. And then the leader provides vision. They keep things organized and running smoothly, and they provide the expectations for the organization. So when we are leaders, most of the time we're trying to make our organization or our business better, right? I mean, that's the goal. We want to operate more efficiently, or we want to get more clients, or we want to solve these problems. And so when we try to make things better, we have to implement some type of change usually. And change is not easy to implement. And I wanted to show you this from a leadership standpoint. This is a chart, and it's about managing complex change in an organization. So you can think about a school, you could think about a business, you can even think about a church. We try to implement a change. And if you look at the bottom, I know it might be kind of difficult for some of you to see, but down at the bottom where it says vision, skills, incentive, resources, and action plan, all of those things are needed to be in place for that change to occur and go well. So as a leader or a member of an organization, you have to have that vision in place for the change. The skills have to be in place. In other words, the people have to know what to do and how to do it. The incentive must be there. In other words, why are we trying to make things better? Or why are we trying to change? The resources have to be put into place. So if we need a book on to show us how to do this, we need to have the book. And then the action plan. So how is this going to be done? And then we have change. What I like about this chart is if you have one missing piece, such as vision at the top, and everything else is in place, there's still confusion as to where are we going with this. If you have skills missing, so you have everything needed to input a program, but the people don't have the skills to do it, they become anxious. If you have the incentive missing, or the why behind the change, or the moral purpose behind it, people will go slow with the change because they don't have the reason why. You know, they're just doing it because somebody told them to do it. And then if you're missing the resources, then you're going to have a lot of false starts. So you're going to change a little bit, and you're going to have to stop and wait for more resources to come in and so forth. So I thought that was an interesting chart, and it's from the enterprise management. Okay, so with change and when we try to make things better in an organization, so much of that depends on the culture of that organization. And I want to talk a little bit about that piece. So culture in an organization is like that organization's unique personality. So if you walk into different schools, you can definitely tell there's a different personality for different schools, even different banks. Sometimes when you walk in, immediately you can sense just a different atmosphere, or different churches, if you want to think of churches. So the personality encompasses the values of the people there, their purpose, the traditions, so the things that they do on a regular basis, the behaviors that they possess, and then the operational frameworks. And another example of maybe two types of culture that might help you kind of solidify this is when you think about Chick-fil-A versus Burger King or McDonald's. So let me ask you this question. When somebody hands you something at Chick-fil-A, what do they always say to you? My pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure. That's a part of their culture. And they teach their employees, we say this, you know, and they teach them how to interact with people. And if you go to another fast food chain restaurant, you don't always hear that. You'll hear you're welcome sometimes, sometimes not. So that's a good example to kind of picture what I mean. For time's sake, I'm actually going to skip over this slide, okay? I want to talk about the effects of organizational culture, and I put school in there because some of this comes from school culture research, but it's very similar. And all of this research actually has roots in anthropology. So these researchers have researched different types of cultures in the world, and then they have seen that some of the same things apply to different types of organizations. So culture shapes the behavior of people, just like the Chick-fil-A example. It builds community and commitment. So if you have a strong culture in your business, people are more likely to stay and be committed. Same with the church. It increases motivation. So if you have a business or an organization with a strong culture, people are more motivated to work and work hard for you. And then it improves the effectiveness of that organization. And for schools, that increases student achievement. So we even see our students achieve more when the culture of the school is stronger. It's that powerful. So here are some elements, and I'm using school culture research, but it applies to organizational culture as well. So instead of a focus on learning for that organization to be that the purpose for that organization, whatever the focus may be. For instance, if it's a bank, if the focus is on getting this many clients for one bank, well, for another bank, the focus might be to make the customer happy. And so you can feel a difference depending on what type of culture you have and what the focus is. Goal setting is an element of school culture or culture in general. Collaboration, and then that sense of community. And usually the sense of community is what you feel the most and the fastest in an organization. I'm actually going to skip this slide as well to save some time. So how do we enhance organizational culture? First, set the vision. And I think probably every business has a vision, but I want to challenge you to think about what it is. Can people even say what the vision is? And did the people in the organization have a hand in creating that? And does it mean something to you? So for us, we came together as a faculty last summer, and we wrote out, and I actually have it here, what we wanted our school to look like in 1 year, in 5 years, and then in 10 years. And so one of our goals is to become a 90-90-90 school. And what that means is 90% free and reduced lunch, over 90% poverty, and then over 90% of students highly achieving and proficient. So we've got the first two, and we're working on the third. Might be a little while, but that's what we're working toward. And then to enhance organizational culture, establishing core beliefs. And this is one of my favorite things to do with the faculty. I'm going to actually show you some of this. What we did was we came together, and I talked to them about, you know, what is it that we agree on as an organization? What do we believe together about our community? What do we believe about our students? And what do we believe about ourselves? Because what we believe affects the culture. So if we believed, which we don't, but if we believed that our kids are not going to do well because of their home life, then that's going to affect how they perform. But if we believe that they can perform just as good as peers at a different school that might have all of those extra things in place, then our students will rise up to that. So I want to show you some pictures. This is us, some things that we had brainstormed for our vision, and then the sticky notes That was for our core beliefs. So I had people write down things that they believed about the students first. And then we grouped the sticky notes with themes. And so that's kind of how we did our core beliefs. And I had a list of them here. Here's one of them. We believe that our school should be a safe place where everyone feels welcomed and loved. So that was one thing that was important to everybody on faculty, and that has affected every morning now this school year. I think I have some more pictures. These are our core beliefs. I think we have seven. So one interesting thing that I've used the core beliefs for is, and I don't know how many of you have to manage employees and evaluate them. How many of y'all have to? Okay. If you do, it's not fun if you have employees that are not doing what they need to do. And it doesn't happen very often, but one thing that I always go back to is our core beliefs. So if I have an employee that comes in late often and I have to address it, then I can say, all right, so-and-so, one of our core beliefs is that our school should be a safe place where everyone's welcome and loved. When you're late, how does that line up to our belief that we decided on was important? Are the students able to be welcomed if you're not here on time? No. And it works really well because we all agreed upon this and signed it. And so when people operate and do things that don't line up to those core beliefs, it's an easier fix because we've all committed to these things, and it's about the students. So one thing that we did later on in January, we created our core beliefs in the summer, and then in January, we went back and revisited that. And we went back and wrote down actions that we do that line up with those beliefs. So what are we physically doing to show that we believe these things? So an example that goes with the core belief that I just shared, we believe that our school should be a safe place where everyone feels welcome and loved. Here are some things that we wrote. We greet every student at the door verbally. So we're going to tell them good morning. We greet students by shaking hands or hugging them. So probably the majority of our kids get a pat on the back or a hug every single morning. We have a resource officer visible in the car rider line in the bus zone. That's for safety purposes. We put aside how we feel that morning so we can make it a positive day for them. We greet students other than the ones that we teach. So we're greeting everybody. And then the teachers arrive on time and are on duty. So all of those actions line up to that one belief that we wrote together. And it has helped us establish our culture and make things consistent, and everyone operates the same way. So that was the second one, establishing core beliefs. Then creating goals. So we have our vision, but it's going to take a long time for us to get to be a 90-90-90 school. So we have goals in between there. And then we provide opportunities for our employees to collaborate. And when we work in isolation, it's not as productive because you're not able to get ideas from other people. And so as a leader, I have to provide opportunities for that to happen or it won't. And then sharing leadership. So what this means is the stakeholders or the staff members that you have, they have a desire to be heard, and it creates buy-in when we hear their voices and then make the decision. And when they are able to share in that decision-making process, they're definitely more committed. All right. So that's a little bit of the leadership piece, and I hope that you enjoyed hearing about our school. And so I want to take questions if you have any questions, and I want to say thank you so much for having me. So any questions? Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm going to say thank you, God, for you and that you, the vision that you had at that school. I've known that school since way back when and known all the principals and most of the faculty for years. And this is such a positive thing that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. We do. We expect to have around 300 students, and again, it'll be 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. And we're excited for a number of reasons. The first being our students are very transient because of rent issues. So their parents don't have the money to pay for rent. Most of our families rent, and so they either move out or move in with someone else. And so we've had students that have started the year with us, went to another school, and now they're back. And so they're literally changing households sometimes 3 and 4 times just within a year. And so now we'll hopefully have a more stable population of students. In fact, just number-wise, I looked at the enrollment from just September to January. I haven't checked it since January. And we had about 64 students who had enrolled, but we also had about 55 students who had dropped, different students. So out of 300 kids, that's about a third of our population has changed within this 1 year. So it's another thing that we have to overcome. So I'm excited about the reconfiguration. Yes, ma'am. I'm staying, thankfully. And the older kids are who I relate with the best, so I'm excited. Yeah.
Do you get any traction with parent-teacher organizations?
Well, the last one that we had, a parent stole the money, so it's disappointing. But we're going to start a new one, and I've been working really hard to try to build relationships with the parents. And so I have a few that I feel are trustworthy enough because it's, you know, separate from the school and they're, you know, dealing with money and the bank separately. So it's kind of an interesting relationship, but I really hope that we can have that going. And we actually, when we host parent nights, we get a lot of parents that come in that, unlike some of the other schools, they really do want the best for their kids. Some of them don't know how to provide that. But yes, a PTO would be amazing. Yeah. Yes, sir. I'd have to look at the calendar. We have a field trip or our field day or a party or a graduation just about every single day from now until the last day of school. But in the future, most definitely, our kids definitely need some male role models. And I have several ideas for next year on how to try to open the doors for more men to be able to come in and build relationships and mentor some of our students. So, yes. Definitely, definitely. I can email it to you. It is. And it's so truthful now that I see and I work where I work. I can't say it another way, but it's like my eyes have been opened up to what a lot of people live like. And it is such a cycle for so many of our kids. They don't even know what normal looks like, some of them, what a normal family should operate like, what normal discipline at home should look like, and things like that. And so they're emulating some of the same behaviors, and when they're adults, they might emulate the same things. So, yeah. Actually, most people are very, very supportive of it, so that's exciting. And I'm really trying to find more ways to partner up with businesses and community members so that we can teach our kids more things and offer them more opportunities. And I think once they come in and see that our students are well-behaved and easy to work with and thankful, and they come from really rough homes, but they're wanting attention and wanting to learn, I think that helps people to see the need and want to provide things like The Leader in Me and programs like that. So, yes.
There was a not so subtle undercurrent of Christianity in your presentation today and in the video. Do you get any pushback about that?
Well, I do have to be careful. And down the street, you know, there's a Buddhist shrine. We have several kids that are Vietnamese, and we have some who are Muslim. So I have to be careful. But we do what we can. I'll put it that way, without trying to cross the line. And we had a Black History program back in February, and some of the girls, the students, had written, it wasn't a dance, but like a, forget the name of it, but where they, it's kind of like a dance, but it's to a praise and worship song, and it was the song Break Every Chain, and tears were just streaming down my face, because that's what our kids need. So many of the families, and I was trying to think, almost all of the discipline problems we see, I can look back at the history of the family or talk to people who know, and there's been some type of drug usage in that home. Either someone has used before, they've moved because of it, someone was arrested, or so forth. And they're just, the chains of addiction are so strong in the area. But that shouldn't stop us, you know. Greater is he that's in me than he that's in the world, right? So, yes. Right. We will. We will. The good news is they're going to start at Leslie Moore Elementary, and they're going to move with that same cohort every year. Right now, they don't really have a cohort they're moving with because they're hopping from school to school. And there will still be some transient students for sure, because a lot of our students come from Julius Patrick, Martin Park, Rugg Elementary, Huddle. So they're still going to come back and forth. But I will say this, once we get them, we try to keep them because we want them to stay stable. So there was one student whose family moved because of an issue across the river, and it was mid-year, and we said, if you can get him here, please let him stay, because we're the consistency for this child. And so we will have some transient students still, and it is going to be like a new set of kids coming in for the fourth grade every year. You're right. Anything else? Okay.
You've mentioned that you give out food to some of the families near the end of the month. What's the source of that?
Where do you get it? Most of it, Andrew and my church, we have a food pantry there, and a lot of it comes from ladies in the church that find deals at Sam's, and so they bring it. Mm-hmm. Yes, just donate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I believe it's 1:02, so it's probably time to wrap up. Thank you so, so much for having me.